At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Build a polished wardrobe that shows you stay you wherever you go with Mack Weldon. Use code MACK25 for 25% off your first order of $125 or more at MackWeldon.com.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Brian Koberger.
We talk a lot about digital footprints in true crime, the search histories, the late night Reddit threads, the burner accounts. What happens when the biggest clue is always hiding in plain sight? Just waiting for someone to connect the dots. In today's episode, we're going to follow the trail Brian Koberger left online from the alleged cryptic Instagram follow. Was there one? To the possible existence of the Papa Roger persona that seemed to predict everything from the murder weapon to the car. It wasn't just a guy obsessed with crime. This was a guy who may have been trying to script the narrative in real time, while the rest of us were still trying to make sense of the crime scene tape. My guest today, retired FBI special agent Jennifer Coffendaffer, brings receipts, literally. She was among the first to screenshot Koberger's suspicious social media connections before they vanished, before the world even knew his name. She's followed the case closely, and what she shares about those early IG follows, the visual patterns, and his writing style will leave you thinking about motive in a whole new way. We dig into the psychological terrain here, not just the possibility of incel ideology, but what that ideology means, the entitlement, the simmering resentment, the idea that women represent something withheld, something owned in the mind of Koberger, allegedly. It's not about Kaylee or Maddie as people. It's about why they symbolized to someone who couldn't connect and what they symbolized. And a person who deeply craved power. We also explore one of the strangest threads in this case, that early morning phone call, Koberger calling his parents around 6 a.m., just hours after the murders. 40-some minutes on the phone, and then hours later, that bizarre mirror selfie in the shower. Thumbs up, smiling, like he just finished a workout, not a massacre. What was said in that call, and what wasn't said? And what could his defense have been trying to avoid by keeping his parents off the stand? Let me know your thoughts in the comment section on YouTube. If you're not there already, just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. And if you're watching on YouTube, check out our podcast platforms. Just do that same search wherever you get podcasts. Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi, and you'll find us there as well. So you can listen to us wherever you go, as well as watch us on YouTube. The comments, however, are on YouTube, so do join us there and press subscribe. I open up the next part of the conversation by asking Jennifer to walk us back to the digital footprints, the motive, the mirror. And the moment, we all started wondering, was this just a man trying to get away with murder or someone desperate to be seen while doing it?
Well, you know, as you know, you can see a lot on social media that is public, that people sure. make public, right? And so certainly you can look up Kaylee, Maddie, mm-hmm. Zanna. You can find a lot publicly even before this happened. But I'm going to say this, and this is on the IG stuff, mm-hmm. the Instagram. One, according to CNN, and there was one other sourcing of this, and according to Mr. Gonzalez, there was on IG where he, I believe, followed them, Maddie and Kaylee, but they didn't follow him back.
Okay.
That's what I recall. And then I've seen I have a screenshot of this, mm-hmm. by the way.
Okay.
That the day that I found out and the story broke, it was Brian Koberger. I will never forget this. The first thing I did, like I always do, is I'm like on Instagram and TikTok and, you know, all the social media is trying to see any links.
Yeah.
That's the first thing I do. And I was in a position because I found out so early, right after it happened, I sent it out. I saw what the IG, I screenshotted it. And then, and I still have it. I'm happy to send it to you, Tony.
Yeah, I'd love to see it.
And this is what, this is between only Maddie and Kaylee, that he was following them. And not that they were following him. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Under his name. And
under Brian, I think it's Brian _ Koberger doctor.
Okay.
Or PhD, something like that.
Yeah.
And so I screenshot it. Anyway, everything ended up disappearing shortly after that. And then, you know, I'm always very apprehensive on any of this stuff because of IA, because of, you know, all the fraudsters that lure. This happened twice in the Reed case to people I know where they were falsely lured to believe somebody was somebody else and that they weren't.
Yeah.
Right. On purpose. So people catfish constantly out there. So I never made a huge deal about it. I think I posted it maybe the day after he was arrested, though, on my Twitter or maybe 2 days later. I'm like, ooh, I see a connection here.
Yeah.
And I've always wondered, did somebody put that up that quick? I mean, I posted on that maybe an hour or two after he was arrested.
It makes you wonder because people are sitting there waiting and ready to do that. There's like a whole group that's like, let's talk about the motive here for a moment. I know you've spoken on that recently. I know you've been quoted in a lot of things and also in that doc. We had talked about the incel angle very early on in this. What's your thoughts on that? Is this someone who was, who would qualify as being an incel or at least very close to it? And were these targets more symbolic than they were of anything else, of an actual, you know, an aggression because he was slighted?
Well, you state it well. That's exactly what I believe. And I've always believed that. I believed it before Brian Koberger was even arrested. Back on the 25th, I think I was involved in an article for Newsweek about who would do this. And I always said, this is an incel. This is an absolute femicide. This is a lashing out of likely years of being tormented with the fact that you can't have the prize you think you deserve.
Yeah. And I mean, with that being said, with it being that, I mean, where do you get the signs on that other than just his behavior that we've heard about? Do you think there was something else? Do you think there's another piece of this that we're not aware of? Because we know a lot of incels, they're in communities, they're online, they're in boards. And obviously, as far as we know right now, but again, there's that seal, he wasn't involved in that sort of stuff. But I don't necessarily know that you need to be in a community to have that way of thinking.
I agree with you. And Tony, I think for somebody like Brian Koberger, I think it would be embarrassing to admit that. You know, CNN just did a documentary last night. It came out. It wasn't very well publicized, but they just did one on him. And they interviewed somebody I had never seen interviewed. I watched it. It's about 2 hours long on one of his buddies. That was friends with him through middle school and early high school, as I recall. And he said that Brian Koberger was the type that couldn't get anybody, but that would always say he could get everybody. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that'd be easy pickings for me or things like that. He said words to that effect in the documentary from last night. And I thought that was very interesting. So it's sort of a compilation of all of that, right?
Yeah.
The we see him as being so confident, even when he's pulled over by the female police officer, how he commands that situation. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure he really gets over on her, but he sure takes control, you know, of that, even that small window of a situation we saw over a woman. But really, when I look at it, look at the K-bar knife. It's a killing machine.
Yeah.
It's not meant for any other purpose than killing animals and or people. Mm-hmm. It's a military knife. It's a SWAT knife. It's a knife meant to kill.
Yeah.
And he chose that knife. And that, to me, was so premeditated on the importance of being able to completely mutilate whoever he was going after.
Yeah.
This wasn't going to just be, you know, a pocket knife stab.
Yeah.
He was going to finish the business in a very brutal way. The other thing is, Tony, when you think about people who choose to stab, I mean, he could have chose to strangle, mm-hmm. could have used a gun, which, you know, isn't, those aren't personal. The strangulation would have been very personal. But to me, it's about wanting to get messy. Like he wanted to feel, I'm sorry, this is so gross, but that blood on him, the power, the ownership of them. So that's why I say for the people who are arguing, oh no, he just wanted to show he could prove he could commit the perfect crime. Nah, I think that would be if he decided to, you know, burglarize a bank and get away with it. The Lufthansa, you know, bank robbery type situation. No, this was so personal. This is my belief.
Yeah, I mean, it was a crime of passion, no doubt. The brutality of it and that aspect of it is more and more disturbing as we learn more and more about just how brutal it was. It wasn't just I'm stabbing and then I'm moving on. It was dark. 6 a.m., the phone call. I want to talk about that. Him calling his parents the morning of the murders, literally just a few hours after and a few hours before he took that infamous picture of him in the shower with the thumbs up. We don't know what went on in those calls, but they weren't quick. They were on for a while. I can't imagine what that conversation was about for 40 some minutes with mom and dad at 6 a.m. in the morning. Are they talking about toast? Are they saying, hey, did you see there's a new toaster strudel out? It's mixed berry. It's quite delicious. The speculation, I know Howard Bloom's speculation is that maybe he said something to them and maybe he doesn't want to have them testify. I'm wondering what went on. What's your thoughts on what went on in that phone call?
I don't believe that. I respect everybody's opinions. Mm-hmm. Look, none of us know but Brian Koberger and the Kobergers. But judging from the Kobergers and what we've seen and judging from the fact that I just don't think he would have ever admitted it to anybody.
Yeah.
This was something that selfie just shows me the joy and, you know, pride he had for accomplishing what he accomplished. It's like me yesterday, I got a birdie for the first time in about 30 years since I picked up golf again. Uh-huh. I had such brimming pride. I took a picture. I wanted the golf ball in it. I saved my card. You know, I was pretty excited about that birdie. That's what that picture showed to me. And I think he's very personal about keeping it within him. I don't think he would ever want to tell his parents. I don't think he told his parents. Mm-hmm. Now, do I think he called up and had, you know, was probably feeling top of the morn? Like, hey guys, doing great. I could see them talking about their upcoming plans for him coming there. I think it was a very cathartic moment for him, but not where he would have disclosed what he did. I really just don't think he did.
I have a hard time believing that the parents knew it for all that time, but I do wonder if there were clues in that phone call that were dropped that upon further review, upon the parents looking back and having the full context of everything, that they may have been called to testify and they would have found something in that phone call that would have led one to believe there's more to this that they may not have seen at that moment. And just the fact that then his parents would have to be there and be the ones that are putting another nail in the coffin would be difficult for them. But that also has to assume that Brian Koberger has some sort of empathy for his parents.
We don't have any knowledge, any information that he has any empathy for his parents.
That's the thing. No. That's why it doesn't make a lot of sense to me that he would be trying to spare them that moment in court of having to be the one that, again, like nails another nail into the coffin of their son. I don't think he can think that, but I don't think his brain goes there. That's unless maybe Ann Taylor said, hey, you know, let's not make your parents testify against you because they're going to have to say this. They're going to have to say that. Let's just not do it. And maybe that was, you know, a learned behavior of, oh, maybe that would be a bad thing. Maybe I'll show them a little respect just because of a tit for tat. They raised me, so I'm not going to make them do that. I don't know.
See, I take it the opposite way.
Yeah.
He, by the witness list we were seeing disclosed and by everything that was coming out, he was backed in a corner thinking, oh my God, everybody is going to see all this terrible stuff about me, this humiliating stuff. They're painting me as, you know, not mentally being able to make these decisions. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
To me, it's more of pride. It's like, no, nobody's going to, you know, put baby in the corner. Nobody's going to say this about me. We've exhausted every chance of winning here, and I'm not going to be humiliated in open court on all of these fronts with all these people getting up here. So I don't think he did it for them.
Yeah.
I think he did it for him and to maintain control of the dialogue.
So here we are, a mass murder possibly taunting the public from behind a keyboard, following his victims on Instagram, writing about dehumanization, and choosing a weapon that wasn't just effective, it was symbolic, personal, intimate, in the most horrifying of ways. There's a lot of theories floating around about motive, but Jennifer did say it clearly. This wasn't just about killing. This was about control, about power, about pushing the world and maybe women because of a lifetime of rejection that he felt. What makes it worse is how calculated it all feels. The IG follows, the incel style bravado, the I can get any girl I want act to friends, even though he can't get anybody. From someone who, by most accounts, couldn't get close to anyone at all. And then the K-bar knife. Not some random weapon of convenience. This was chosen, intentional, designed to rip, not just kill. You don't pick that unless you want it to be ugly. And then that phone call, 6 a.m., 40 minutes on the line with mom and dad. We don't know what it was said, but we do know it happened. When you pair that with a mirror selfie just hours later, the smug grin, the thumbs up, you don't get a picture of guilt. You get a portrait of pride. Jennifer doesn't buy the idea that Koberger confessed anything in that call. And honestly, neither do I. But what if the point wasn't confession? What if the point was connection on his terms, to assert control, to pretend just for a moment that he was still the golden boy, still calling home after a big academic win, not after four people bled to death in the night? And then there's a real gut punch. We still don't know the full motive. We may never. But the more we learn, the more it looks like Koberger didn't just want to pull off the perfect crime. He wanted to own the narrative from the scene to the screen. And now, with his guilty plea entered, the courtroom may never hear all of what investigators found. But the internet never forgets, and neither do the people watching. So we'll keep asking questions, and we'll keep following the trail, and I know you will too. Give us your thoughts in the comment section on YouTube. Would love to hear them. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you're listening to the podcast. If you're out there on Apple Podcasts or Patreon or iHeart, whatever it may be. And also please do check out our YouTube channel so you can comment. And also you can watch us do the show as well. We have unique content on YouTube as we do on the podcast platforms. There is stuff exclusively on both ends. So if you want it all, be sure to hit subscribe in both places. I do greatly appreciate your following, your comments, and your support of the program. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want true crime coverage all day, every day? Press subscribe now to the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today and get the latest cases delivered right to your feed.